The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Mark Durkin.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
And welcome to Education America, where we are taking steps to save the classroom so that we can save the country. Come along with us. K through 12 education is the playing field. And as the 16th President Abraham Lincoln so succinctly stated, he said the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. I'm Mark Durkin, joined by my co-host and founder of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom. How are you, Rebecca?
I am great. How are you today?
I'm good. It's wonderful to see you.
You too.
It's been a sunny couple of weeks we've had here.
We have had some beautiful rain. Minnesota fall weather. Yes, it's been gorgeous. I love the warm Septembers.
Absolutely. They've been beautiful for sure. Well, the basis of critical race theory is the attempt to forever link racial identity with America's history. We've been talking about this now for quite a while here on the program. And while its advocates urge that CRT interprets how racism is embedded in our institutions, school families here in Minnesota and across the country, they're taking notice of how the free exchange of ideas in the classroom, they're being eradicated. But instead, our guest tonight says that when schools teach racial equity, kids will learn fear and anger.
Mm-hmm. And joining us in studio tonight to address the dangers associated with the nation's K-12 schools approach to equity is Catherine Kirsten. Catherine is a senior policy fellow at Center of the American Experiment. She's also a writer, attorney, and has served as a Metro columnist for the Star Tribune from 2005 to 2008. She also served as an opinion columnist for the paper between 1996 and 2013. Catherine was a founding director of the Center of the American Experiment and served as its chair from 1996 to 1998. Catherine, thank you once again for joining us here on Education America.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Good. Well, the school year has just begun, and the debates surrounding new and expanded racial equity programs are taking center stage at many K-12 schools here in Minnesota. What kind of programs are we talking about? And what would be the goals of the programs?
Well, these are critical race theory focused programs that you've talked about on the program a number of times. Mm-hmm. The stated goals and the actual goals, let's say, at least on the part of organizers versus good-hearted teachers who are trying to do their best and don't necessarily, buy into or even quite know the fundamental goals. The programs claim to be about improving racial justice and developing empathy in students and that kind of thing. But really, they are, in my view, about dividing us as a nation into warring racial groups. And as I've thought about this recently, it's occurred to me that there's this kind of underlying message of these programs, drums into kids' heads, that they are descended from such unjust people. They live in such an unjust society as oppressors, you know, as the dominant class, that what they really should do is hand over to victims the power to make decisions about what racial justice really requires. In fact, this is a moral imperative. Try to create that mindset in kids and, you know, basically give away power over their lives.
Mm-hmm. And just causing such division, as you pointed out. And I find it, especially with the background of Afghanistan right now, just the hypocrisy of this notion of oppression in the United States of America, as compared to what we are seeing in Afghanistan play out before our very
eyes. Those who are experiencing true oppression.
True oppression. True oppression.
I've thought the same thing.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, Catherine, over the summer, you had the opportunity to tour the state with the Center of American Experiment to help educate Minnesota families on this year's proposed social studies standards. Now, the second draft of those standards came out over the summer. You informed us that the third standards are going to be coming out this Tuesday on September the 28th. But we'll backtrack here just a little bit. What can you tell us concerning the specifics surrounding the proposed standards at the second draft level, and maybe what can we anticipate coming with the third draft level?
Mm-hmm.
Right. The second draft of the standards continues to advance the fundamental, quote, lens or vision, world view of the first draft. And this, of course, is the notion of critical race theory underlying all that race is the foundation of our identity, that our nation is divided into warring race-based groups, et cetera. But there is one thing that is very, well, it's new in this third draft, and that is that the standards drafters have created what's called a fifth strand, which is ethnic studies. The standards are about history, economics, geography, citizenship, by law. And in this new draft, there's this notion of ethnic studies. This is a sort of a vision that has been advanced in California, actually adopted recently in California. It's really just critical race theory kind of writ large. So there's that. Mm-hmm. And then there is, in the geography standards, just, you know, an overwhelming emphasis on society as based in power groups. Nothing about states and capitals. Name countries, know where oceans are.
Right, kind of which is what geography thing. Represents.
Absolutely.
It's all about power and systemic racism. So, you know, it's more of the same, but dressed up a bit.
Mm-hmm. So just out of curiosity, I know that the first set of standards came under massive fire for not incorporating things like the Holocaust or World War II and that type of thing. My understanding is while they were included in the second draft, they're still being taught from the perspective of critical race theory. So not really looking at the war for what it did to Nazi Germany, but actually looking to the rest of the world, but actually looking at it through a critical race theory lens. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, all these things are, there's no context. There's no real understanding of history as a series of chronological developments over the human past. It's all filtered through this lens of the power struggle and the domination of white people, basically.
Wow.
Or blamed for all the evils of the world. Yes.
Right. Yeah, well, when we talk about the new or expanded racial equity programs, which, you know, we kind of entered into here at the beginning of the show, is it the proposed social studies standards that are really driving the discussion on those new and expanded racial equity programs? Or do you think they would have been doing these without the social studies standards discussion?
Oh, yes, yes. It's just multiple fronts in the same, or it's the same people.
Right.
You know, it's the same people in our Minnesota Department of Education and the teachers union, basically. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's all of a piece.
Mm-hmm. So out of curiosity then, let's say that somehow, by some miraculous notion, the social studies standards end up remaining what they are today. What happens then with all of these racial equity programs that are being driven across the state? I mean, literally in almost every school district across the state and really nation, but we're just talking about Minnesota right now. How would they manage that? Would they try to do this outside of the standards as almost like an additional class, or would they just insert them into the social studies curriculum anyway? Would they defy? You know, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, this is a worldview that permeates the curriculum, depending on the teacher, let's say, and to some extent the school district. But, you know, teaching tolerance kinds of lessons, math instruction. Mm-hmm. There are just numerous ways that you can have an overlay of critical race theory. I mean, you think of art, for example. You know, this program I've talked about before that's been taught in the school in Edina, the Melanin Project, is kindergartners, and they're taught to color their hands, trace them, you know, color them the color of their skin, put them on a poster, and then they're lectured about how racist they are. They don't need any of
it's a good point. So they would just pivot. They would pivot away from the social studies standards into all the other, which then in some respects begs the question, why are we continuing to battle against these if the school districts are going to do what they want to do anyway?
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, and the scary thing about that, too, is, you know, the types of teachers that are going to be hired for the classroom from this point going forward.
Right.
Now there's this test you almost have to go through. Okay, will you subscribe to the CRT and the racial equity, you know, policies that we're pushing, and if not,
absolutely,
you can't teach here.
Absolutely, right. So a few years ago, I went through the test, or the just what you're talking about, Mark, the sort of questions in job, to apply for a job in the Edina schools. And this was 3-4 years ago, and they had all those questions in there. But this is nothing new for teachers, right? Because our colleges of education are permeated with this. And so they have heard it for 4 years. And
they just buy into it. They buy into it. Yeah.
Some of them, yes. Mm-hmm. And others are, you know, afraid to challenge it.
Right. Right. You hear that actually a lot, which I find extremely frightening, that people just feel like they can't push back for fear of losing their jobs.
Yeah.
But as to why we're doing this, you know, I think raising parents' awareness. If parents would flood school board members, if parents would elect different school board members and demand a change in leadership, we wouldn't be seeing this. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Right. Parent involvement.
You know, just on that note, too, you know, we have elections coming up here in the first part of November for a lot of school board positions. You know, is there a lot of information out there that families could be researching to really know the background and the belief systems that a lot of these school board members have?
Boy, I have seen suggestions about voter guides, exactly what you're talking about, Mark. But you know, how many school districts are there? How are you going to, these are nonpartisan elections. And they all use the same terminology, you know, we're together in unity or whatever.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't know what that means on their side.
Yeah.
I think just checking with your neighbors is the best.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, good point.
You know, Catherine, what's the feedback from Minnesota families been like concerning the proposed standards that we're talking about here, the first, the second draft, you know, and based on the feedback, is some form of implementation in 2023 still likely, at least from the formal level? We talked earlier about how ideas from that are still being drawn upon that could be working towards putting them towards the racial equity policies now.
Well, this is encouraging news in the sense that Center of the American Experiment has in last January, we launched our Raise Our Standards campaign of public awareness, social media advertising. We had a petition and comment form that was forwarded from parents to the Department of Education, we had 17,000 comments on this
so
latest
fantastic.
Draft.
Mm.
And this was very much recognized by the standards drafters. In terms of implementation, the legislature did adopt a law which said that there would not be implementation of the standards. That would be put off until 2023.
But
the problem, of course, is that they weren't able to derail the standards drafting process. Right. So what that would really require is a change of leadership at the top in the state so that the legislature and the governor could go back and undo these and do them over.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Which we have the election coming up in 2022. So
there is
a possibility of that actually happening. Yeah. So you talked about the fact that the third draft of the standards is coming out on Tuesday. With that, what is, after that, what's the next step in the revision process of the standards? And since the legislature isn't consulted, what can Minnesota families do to stop the standards from being revised and implemented?
Well, at this point, when the new draft comes out, there will not be an opportunity for further comment. This will go to the Commissioner of Education. As soon as she signs off on it, it will go to administrative law judge and through the rulemaking process. And here, I think what the center plans to do and other opponents is to challenge the standards on the basis of legality. Okay. That is adding this fifth strand, which is not according to law, challenging the standards on the basis that they are not clear, concise, measurable, etc., as law requires, and challenging the nature of the committee that put these together. For example, business people are supposed to be part of this process, and to our knowledge that isn't the case. Those kinds of challenges.
Mm-hmm. And what do we know about the administrative law judges? Is there just, I don't know a lot about that process. Are there multiple administrative law judges, or is there just one?
Multiple. So this is a legal process it's difficult to achieve your goal in that way, but it's the next step for us.
Yeah. Okay. So assuming let's say that the administrative law judge decides to throw out all of the arguments against the draft standards. Does it immediately become the new set of standards then at that point, or are there any other steps after that process?
Well, that would be the final.
That is the final
stage.
Okay.
And then of course with the legislature's decision, pushing back implementation.
Yeah, which we do have one more session. I think they were due to take. I thought they weren't going to be implemented until 2024 anyway. But,
yeah, as you're saying that, I'm thinking I need to look back at that. What was the final decision? I mean, it may have been 2025. I really should know that.
I think that might be right because
I think it's 2025.
Yeah, because it said they were being pushed back 1 year, and I thought the original year that they would be implemented was 2024.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, and just to be clear here, too, in this process, if, lawsuits were to come up, the legislative branch, they have no say in this, correct? It's really just a move unilaterally on the executive branch, and the judicial branch would somehow decide the fate of it.
Yeah, which is
shocking,
well,
yes, but
right?
The thing is, if you did have a legislature and a governor who supported a different approach, they could pass a law stating that no new standards could be implemented unless there were legislative approval. Mm-hmm. So it would take that kind of change.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Catherine, you recently had a conversation with a teacher who described himself as a recovering wokester. If you would share with our listeners what this teacher came to realize after he supported his school's equity focus, was he initially expecting What was he initially expecting to see happen, and what did he see as the outcome for students as these equity policies were being implemented?
Yeah, well, such a good question. He, like so many teachers, is very concerned about the racial learning gap, very much cares about his students. So he supported this equity approach because of its stated goals. But he discovered quite quickly that the reality was very different.
Yeah. And that's the sad thing, because like you say, the language that they use all sounds so good. And so I think it's really easy for people, teachers obviously included, to think, oh yeah, this will be a good thing. This will help. And, you know, I, like you said at the very, very beginning, teachers are good-hearted, most of them.
Yeah.
And
yes.
they want to see their students succeed. They want to see all of their students succeed.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
And I would encourage your listeners to go back to our podcast, which you can find at savetheclassroom.com, and listen to several episodes that we did back in August with the FAIR organization,
yes,
which is the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. They basically talk about how they are working to educate people at the grassroots level of how terms and concepts and methodologies have been hijacked.
Mm-hmm.
And they present themselves in a certain way in terms of how they're using those words, of wanting to bring change that's positive.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it's quickly finding out that the agenda is totally different than what's being advertised.
Exactly. Yes, exactly right. Your point to a book that helped, or sorry, the book, Coddling of the American Mind, right?
Right.
You had read that book and you felt that that book could help open the eyes of many teachers, and particularly this teacher. And he really saw the harm that comes to students as a result of the well-intentioned coddling, quote unquote, which
right.
is right from the book.
Right.
And this is a problem not only in Minnesota, but across the nation's K-12 schools. What's the name of the book, and what do the authors have to say about the implementation of racial equity policies?
Well, the book is called The Coddling of the American Mind, How Good Intentions and Bad Ideas Are Setting Up a Generation for Failure, by NYU social psychologist Jonathan Haidt and First Amendment expert Greg Lukianoff. And this teacher actually told us that, we said, well, what can we do to help teachers understand the problems that you've come to see after a number of years of, you know, real sort of tragic outcomes?
Mm-hmm.
He said the best thing he could recommend was that teachers read this book, because it really opened his eyes.
Hmm. And do you know how he got his hands on it? Did he just happen upon it, or did somebody give it to him?
You know, I have no idea.
Huh.
But it really, really brought everything into focus for him.
Mm-hmm. That is so good. Yeah, that book really resonated with me as well. And, you know, I think about how they wrote this book pre-COVID, and yet how much more truth there is to their thought process of this book, of, you know, the safetyism and what have you. We're going to talk about that next week when we have you on, with the way schools have handled COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been very interesting.
Excellent point, Rebecca. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Catherine, you had an opportunity also to review the book, obviously. You point to the authors presenting what was deemed as a mountain of social science data that highlights the dangers that are associated with the nation's K-12 schools' approach to equity. You know, what does the data suggest? Let's take a few minutes to talk about this, you know, in regards to the current mental health crisis that's afflicting so many young Americans across the country.
Yes. So they talk about these just sky high, and as you say, before COVID, rates of anxiety and depression among young people. But they make a point that I think is particularly interesting, and that is that children today overall lag their peers from previous generations by a number of years in terms of maturity and their readiness to take on adult responsibilities. I've forgotten, it's something like the average 18-year-old today is, in these respects, where 15-year-olds were 20 years ago.
I think it's 3 years.
Yeah, I think it's 3 years.
Yeah. It's just really, really shocking. I didn't mean to cut you off. There's a lot of interesting data that they share in that book. And I know as a school leader, and you know, I run a school where parents don't seem to be as oriented in this way as what we see nationwide. But there's still some of that. And it's been really interesting to just even compare the way I parented my kids. My children are all adults now. And then seeing how some of it changes over the course of time, even in a school like ours. And it is, you know, and again, I'm very thankful because the vast majority of our parents don't subscribe to this notion, but some of them do. And when you see the results kind of right in front of your eyes, you know, it's one thing to read about it. It's another thing to see it. And it's really disturbing. You know, these kids they don't know how to kind of escape that almost being under the microscope kind of all the time. There's just a real sense of not even just helicoptering, but, you know, I've heard the term lawnmower parents these days. I think that term came out. Actually, that I might have read that book in this book. Or I read that term in this book, but
I don't remember that. Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, but the point is that, you know, parents love their children so much, and there is just this notion of we have to protect them from everything. I want them to have everything that I didn't have as a child, and I want to protect them from everything bad that maybe happened to me, and that over controlling nature that can happen.
Yeah.
And then that spreads because then they expect that of the schools. And so then suddenly schools are now fearful of parents coming after them for this or that and that and the other thing. So then the schools start implementing kind of this over-safetyism as well.
Yes.
And we've had to really push back against that at our school. And, you know, a great book to help kind of come alongside this notion is an old book that is The War Against Boys. And what is the name of that author? Do you remember her name? I don't remember.
Michael Gurian? Is that Michael Gurian?
No, it's a woman, and I just cannot remember her name.
It's not Christina Hoff Sommers.
Yes, that's it.
Christina Hoff Sommers.
Yes,
yes.
And she talks about, she you know, she wrote that book maybe, 15, 18, 20, maybe 20 years ago. And so she saw this coming, and she was specifically talking about boys in that case. But a lot of what she was saying really applies across the culture now.
Yes.
So, very interesting. Well, Catherine, it's been really enjoyable talking to you about this topic. And I would encourage our listeners to go back and listen to some of these podcasts that we've covered with Catherine on critical race theory. And also start paying attention to your local school board elections. In a few weeks, we're going to be bringing some of those candidates onto our show so that they can talk about how they want to change the story for their school districts and get the conversation headed back in the direction of academic excellence rather than talking about critical race theory. So I would encourage our listeners to listen in the upcoming shows. And then next week, we'll have Catherine back, and we'll be talking about this book more specifically, The Coddling of the American Mind.
Absolutely.
So, thanks for joining us tonight, and thank you, Catherine. We always love having you on our show. You are a great, great guest. Always very knowledgeable.